Welcome to the Mother Love Podcast. This is Claire Larson, your host, and this project was made possible because of the support of Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition. Mother Love was created to promote healing, connection, and shared wisdom through stories. Like any given day spent parenting, each episode brings a balance of tears, laughter, wonder, and surrender. When it comes to parenting, no one should go it alone. On Mother Love, we see you. We hear you. We're in this together. Okay. Hi, dear listeners. We're going to kind of pick up where we left off with the previous episode and go into the next part of Kyla's story and her family story, which is the time that their son, Connor, spent in the NICU, and then followed by the time that they were released and are now at home and navigating what life looks like now. And so Kyla really shared this story in the hopes that it would provide hope and just some validation to families or loved ones of those who are going through similar experiences. She felt very isolated and alone a lot of times during her experience, and so it's her hope and her intention that this would reach people who really need to hear it. Also, just a little bit of a heads up that, of course, when you have a little one in a situation like this, it is really hard, and so there are pieces of the story that might be best listened to when you can give yourself some time and space to process them. So just wanted to give you a heads up on that. And with that, we will dive into the next part of the story. This is where things get really hard. Once Connor is born.
Yeah.
Things started to move really fast.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So he was born and got to see him for a little bit. They quickly took him away, and you know, I didn't know this at the time, but he was in respiratory distress and, you know, was showing signs of that. So yeah, they took him away and down to the NICU, and I was exhausted. And yeah, I mean, and there's so many emotions at that moment of laying there, of being exhausted but also relieved, because I knew he was, you know, he was at least okay from every indication. They told me he's okay, and you know, we'll get him down to the NICU and, you know, make sure he has what he needs. And so, but then just also the, yeah, just not being with him right away, and also relieved that, you know, the physical part was over. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Also, I still wanted to be pregnant because right. I just because it was early, and I knew that there was no guarantee, and just for his health, that, you know, I wished I could have still been pregnant.
Yeah. And we talked about that feeling of going from having this little one inside of you and then having them outside of you. And there just are these degrees of separation that happen, right? And then you cut the cord, but then usually baby is on you. And these are all things that, like, that moment of skin to skin is like really crucial for mom to feel safe and at ease, that everything's okay. It's like this physical reassurance. Mm-hmm. And then also the bonding that comes along in those first minutes of life and what happens when that's disrupted. And for you, that was disrupted. And so that's really devastating.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really hard to, you know, be there alone. And my husband had actually gone down with Connor into the NICU and followed the nurses down there, which he needed to do. But yeah, I felt really alone, and I just wanted, I wanted my baby with me, and just was laying there and having the experience of having my first son and being able to have that experience. Mm-hmm. I just
Right. You knew what you were missing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And all the things that they do after you give birth and the things they need to do. It's like, I don't even remember that from my first, but
right.
You know, but then it's just me there and they're doing those things. And
right.
That disconnection is a feeling that is, that continued, you know, throughout the, while he was in the NICU, and it's something that I experienced since he's been home. You know, I think some of it honestly even happened before he was born, because I was having like anticipatory grief of if he wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And trying to disassociate a little bit.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I don't want to say I regret, but, you know, that it has affected the sort of bond and connection. It's hard to admit.
Well,
as a mom,
it's just what our brains do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a conscious decision, or it's just what our brains do to protect us
mm-hmm.
from the worst possible thing that could happen. You know, it's a defense mechanism that just exists as a human. It's not like a choice that we make.
Yeah.
But we were talking, you know, when we weren't recording, about that being one of the losses, those moments of bonding, and the very, very instinctual need to have your baby close to you. And when, you know, when Connor was then in the NICU, and my experience is vastly different than yours, but we've talked about when Kyla was really sick, my Kyla, you're also Kyla, but when my daughter Kyla was really sick and I wasn't able to hold her or be near her, or there were moments when she was like in surgery as an infant, and mm-hmm. it's like hard to describe the feeling of needing to protect your baby and not being able to protect your baby, and just what that does.
Yeah. It's so hard. It is.
It's so hard.
It's
the worst.
I mean, it just kind of goes against everything yeah. biologically. And again, it's these very conflicting emotions of him, you know, him when he was in the NICU, having to be there,
right,
and so grateful for
right.
the people there, and just what incredible, you know, care he was getting, but also just feeling so helpless
yeah.
as a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's all these sort of disconnections. So when you are able to hold your baby for the first time, and for me it was, let's see, I think 4 days after he was admitted to the NICU, so, you know, fairly early. I know some babies at earlier gestation, there's, you know, a longer time before when you can hold them, but so after 4 days I was finally able to hold him and do skin to skin, but they're still attached to cords and wires.
Mm-hmm.
And you still early on have to ask for permission.
Yeah.
And you come in at certain times. I mean, I think a constant feeling that I had while he was there was, I was just like this bystander
mm-hmm.
and coming to visit my baby. And that's not any way the staff made me feel or anything. It's just
the reality.
The reality of the situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, the cords and wires are a big barrier, and IVs
mm-hmm.
and
yeah. And I was going to say, like, what's really kind of what you're saying too is like the, you have to put all your faith in people that you don't even know, like who are strangers. But you do it because the only thing keeping your baby alive and well is that they know how to do these things and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we could swoop in and take our babies back and put them on our chests like we want to, that would hurt them. That would harm them. Mm-hmm. So it's this feeling, it's like all these contradicting feelings where someone would come in and, you know, put a catheter in or put an IV in my tiny baby and watching like the suffering that that caused, but then also knowing that like, and wanting to just like seriously punch them in the face. Like I wanted to really punch them in the face. And like, but then knowing that like that was what was going to save her. And so it was this feeling of like always wanting to like protect your baby from the people who are like keeping her alive for me. And that was a constant, like I would be like equally like raging and angry with what they had to do and super grateful that they were doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have a little one in any kind of a medical situation like that, especially like your tiny baby with all these big machines and all these people, it's so hard to try to hold all of those emotions at once. And at some point you just have to like surrender to all of it and just like hope that it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because it's like too much to try to process or like, you know. And I think that that is when you go into feeling disassociated or feeling like just shocked or the trauma and crisis and intensity of what's happening. Like there were times that I couldn't stay in my body. Like,
yeah,
it was too much.
Yeah. Just, and that reality is really hard to grapple with, the conflicting emotions and absolutely the fear, but also just being thankful, mm-hmm. you know, that at this point your child is alive and right. being thankful for modern medicine and also being frustrated by when things don't go as well or something happens. Yeah, the IVs, and kind of went through that same experience of watching that and just kind of the nature of with babies, sometimes the best place to put the IV is in their head. Mm-hmm. And so that was really jarring, and walking in to see that. And again, just wanting to take all of those things off of him and just like have him with me. And, you know, it's like your logic brain and then your biological mom brain, and those two things are seem to always be at odds every day.
And you guys were there for a long time, and you had another kiddo at home, which in my story this is different because this was my first baby, and I can't imagine how hard it must have been to also be thinking of missing your older kiddo and not being able to do, like, to have him meet baby and all these other things. Mm-hmm. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, so that other component, added component of this was really challenging. And just first with him being 32 weeks, I think going into that, I was thinking, and some of this is what sort of the outside world puts on it, is that, oh, well, babies are born, you know, much earlier than that and do okay. But so him being born at 32 weeks, I just thought, okay, well, you know, I was hopeful, but yeah, he ended up having some setbacks. And the main one, he got serious infection called necrotizing enterocolitis, which can happen in the NICU with babies that need to eat, but it's kind of too early for them, for their bodies to really process food. And so they can get this infection, and it's in their kind of digestive system and in their intestines. And so anyways, he got that about a month into his NICU stay, and he was progressing really well with oxygen and starting to do feeding and meet several milestones, and then kind of had that setback of getting the infection. And then he was off of food for a week, and and then his oxygen levels started dipping, and so had to be put back on oxygen. And so that really was a whole roller coaster. And the added dynamic of having, my older son, and not being so, my older son and husband were in Helena, and I had to be in Great Falls to see the baby at the NICU. And so, that whole part of it was just added to the feeling of isolation, but also sort of went against all of the, mom, like, take care, be there for, and I just felt so torn the entire time. And I think my husband and I both felt that in different ways, because he couldn't be in Great Falls and I couldn't be in Helena. And
that's so much. Mm-hmm. And you were staying with family, but even having to sleep in a different place than your baby and have to drive somewhere in order to see him, like you mentioned, feeling like a bystander, feeling like a visitor, like a, just must have felt so hard to like wake up every day and be like, okay, this is what I'm doing today. And I know it's going to suck. And I like, but it's all I can do. And you just do all you can do. And that's one thing we talked about that you did do, was pump breast milk and store up a bunch of breast milk, which I think is probably maybe a common experience for moms who have babies in the NICU, because it is one of the only things that you really feel like you can do. So will you talk about that a little bit, just as like some common ground that I think a lot of moms share?
Yeah. So I think it's just this overall feeling of, the lack of control and being able to control anything in the situation. And so I really focused in on what I could do to, was like, okay, I can pump breast milk to feed my baby. And so I did every 3 to 4 hours I pumped, and I woke up in the middle of the night several times to pump. And so that was, it's just something that I could do, and I felt useful. And I felt like it was something that, if there was one thing I could do to have that feeling of providing, for my baby, that was it. And so missing the physical connection, but, I'm able to provide him with food. So,
Yeah.
And I did that, throughout the time he was there. So, he was in the NICU for 53 days total, and so was doing that and saving it and for when, he got out. And, eventually through the course of him being discharged from the NICU and coming home for a couple of days, then he started developing, just some symptoms, signs of digestive issues. And so had to take him back to the NICU, which was a whole, emotional experience all over again. And found out that he had a severe milk protein allergy. And so I was not able to give him the breast milk anymore that I had pumped. And so that's something I'm sort of still wrestling with, and actually still have that breast milk in my freezer.
Listen, any mom who's ever pumped, even for a small amount of time, like, that shit's miserable. And you do it, and like you said, like, it's a way that you can provide and it feels good, but like, it is tedious, and it's time consuming. There's so much to it. It requires a lot of dedication, and even just throwing out like one bottle worth of breast milk is hard. And so I don't blame you for needing to keep it. And, you know, I mean, who knows what will happen, but that I hate that that happened.
Yeah.
I hate that that's a part of your story. Like, it just is so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, you know, another thing of, like, I just felt like it was something I could do, and then
it wasn't.
And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I was really looking forward to nursing him when he was able to get out, and, you know, that just, again, that disconnection. And I think getting that back is something that I've been really trying to focus on.
Yeah.
Since he's been discharged and he's 6 months old, but also just something that I've gone through that I wasn't anticipating is in the, you know, months since he's been discharged, we've had a lot of doctor's appointments and a lot of follow-up that I was not anticipating that.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is early intervention. Want to make sure, you know, that developmentally things are going okay and that we're not missing something, but it's just a lot.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You sort of think at some point, like, the fog will clear and everything will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that doesn't happen, when you still have to do all this extra stuff, that must feel hard.
Yeah, it is hard. And I think those, again, that anticipatory grief of, should I be preparing myself for something really serious that is happening with him, or being guarded?
Yeah.
So that's just a continuing thing that we're continuing to kind of deal with, and just not feeling like there's been a lot of time to process what happened, the NICU experience, and then going right into, okay, you have to resume your normal life, but then you've also got, you know, all these doctor's appointments and things to worry about. So, yeah.
Yeah. It like, I don't even know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's just so much, Kyla. And there's a part of me that is sometimes like, I just want to stop thinking about the podcast or recording or anything, and just like, mom to mom, just be like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, this is so hard, and I don't see that there's anything you can do other than, like, you're just loving your family and you're loving your little guy and you're carrying on the best you can. And, like, I wish that you didn't have to. I wish that, like, you could just take a year and do nothing but, like, snuggle him, you know?
Yeah.
And just, like, heal. But, like, we live in a world where we just have to, like, dust ourselves off and keep going. And it's really hard.
Yeah. That's been another, hard part about it, is that you, with everything getting disrupted and him being 2 months early, that throws off, like, the whole plan for taking time away from work, and then you're having to split that up between, you know, the time in the NICU and then time when you get home. And so I had intended to take 3 months with him when he was born. I didn't take enough time with my first son, and I was committed to say, I'm going to be at home for 3 months with Connor. And so that got broken up, and then you're kind of just thrown into this, the medical appointments, and then trying to work because, you know, you don't have leave time available and anymore. And so it's all of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would wish for too, is just time to connect. And I just, And things go by so quickly in these first months as it is. I will say, though, the NICU felt like it was forever.
Yeah.
And the same day over and over with, you know, a new concern every day and every moment. But the first months go by so quickly that it's like, I've missed out on this. I want to catch up. I want to get that time back.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's continues to be my goal, but I just feel like being able to come out from under all of this and like just breathe and be able to do that, that we're kind of getting there, but we're not quite there.
Yeah.
And
How have you found ways to like take care of yourself in all of this, or have you?
I've been trying to be a little bit more intentional about that, you know, as much as possible. So, and it was something early on that I had, you know, after the NICU, I didn't want to wait. And I was very honest with myself about what kind of I had gone through and what an emotional toll it had taken. And so, you know, had done a survey after a postpartum survey of, you know, trying to flag anything with postpartum depression, and, you know, went through that and said, yeah, I'm, you know, I've got a lot that I need to process. And so I did reach out and for counseling. And so that is the number one thing. And it's made a world of difference.
Yeah.
And it's really helped me avoid just completely brushing off that experience.
Right.
And really, it's just really helped me process it and process it in healthy ways. So that's the number one thing. Mm-hmm. And then also getting somewhat regular massages has been really helpful, and just trying to not take time every day because that doesn't seem reasonable, but just be a little bit more intentional about maybe on a weekly or every other week basis, like what's something I can do to, not lose sight of, like I do need to kind of take care of myself emotionally and
right. I mean, you do, but there's that balance, right? Of like you do and you are to the best of your ability, but you also don't want to make it another thing that's like with that, like that you can't reach this goal of like enough self-care, so then you beat yourself up for that too.
Mm-hmm.
I always think that's kind of a pitfall of like when we talk about air quotes self-care, we have to be careful to not also make that another thing to just berate ourselves for not doing it well enough, you know? And I think that when I think about, I'm really happy to hear that you have a counselor who's helping you, because I do think that PTSD is a real thing for families who go through these experiences with their little ones. Like, it is traumatic, and we do tend to like disassociate and compartmentalize, and the things we have to do with our mind to survive experiences like this, like if we leave them all locked up and shelved like that, it's going to hurt us.
Yeah.
So when you're able to help have someone sort of help you integrate those experiences and work through the emotions that you weren't able to feel then, like you have to at some point work through them, right? And so that coupled with massages, even if they're not as regular as we wish they could be, that's a way to heal and mend the relationship with your body too, which is something I feel like is really important when it comes to your story of like your body doing things that it did without you being in control of it, and what the result of that was. It's like you almost have to intentionally befriend your body again.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And just, exactly. To take those moments of truly being able to relax.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's sort of the physical and the emotional, and yeah, both are really, really important. And, you know, I think even if you haven't gone through the preterm birth, it's just such an emotional experience regardless. And so, you know, it's such an important part of health, is just really the mental health aspect of things. And it is not something that family can truly understand necessarily.
Right.
And it's just, that's been really important. And since having him home, I've also sought out resources, podcasts. There's a great one called the Help Hand to Hold podcast, and it's specifically for NICU parents. And it's something that I wished I had access to when he was in the NICU. I was just trying to get through every day, but I think hearing those stories and that a lot of the emotions that I went through when he was there, and just sort of having that validation was, I mean, so helpful.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another thing that I do frequently, is in a way going back in time, but also their stories about, since people have been home, what do they experience and what to expect. And
Yeah. And it is helpful just to feel like you're not going through it alone. Mm-hmm. And then one other thing I want to talk about, and then we can kind of wrap up, but you mentioned too that, you know, all of this obviously puts strain on your relationships. And when it comes to like our partners and when we're married, I know that you talked about before that, you guys tell each other all the time, like, I couldn't do this without you. And there are those, even if they seem small, like, they're really significant given everything you guys have on your plate with, like, appointments and work and daycare and kiddo getting sick, and you still have to come record this podcast, and just, like, so much, you know, that sometimes it's not like we can always go on these big fancy dates or something, but it's, like, these little things that we do within our relationships that let people know that we're still connected. Like, can you talk about that piece a little bit?
Yeah, that's been important. I mean, since we've been home and being able to be in the same place, you know, and just reconnecting, and acknowledging we are both different people since this whole experience, just because it has changed things in our family. But so acknowledging that, but being home and just, I mean, telling each other as much as we can, I couldn't do this without you. And you know, I think there's a mutual understanding of this is, and we say this a lot, like, this is a really hard time, and we acknowledge this and that we are going through it together. We are both experiencing it, talking about, you know, it's we talked every day on the phone when Connor was in the NICU, but being home, really being able to say, this is kind of what I went through when I was there. And, you know, my husband will talk about sort of his experience, and we lived almost separate experiences.
Totally.
And so having just that kind of reconciling of, you know, what did you go through on a daily basis? And, you know, what did I go through? And so that's just talking about that. And again, processing that with somebody who can understand, you know, what you're going through. And I think with my husband, it's, you know, maybe one of the challenges for him is, like, he almost feels like I had it harder because, you know, being the mom. And, but he's also had a tough experience in a different way.
Yeah.
It's just a different way. It's not,
right.
No, my experience hasn't been harder than his. And so,
yeah, that seems really important to be able to step into one another's shoes and see that it was hard on the whole family. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, neither of us has said it's all on you, you know, and our jobs thankfully are flexible enough that we can share the sort of like responsibilities of the doctor's appointments. And
tell me about your best moments currently with Connor? Like, what's he, as he's getting to be 6 months old, like, what do you just cherish about his little personality?
Oh, man, there's a lot. So much. But, I mean, I think waking up in the morning and sort of hearing him in his room and walking in there, and he just has the best smile.
Aww.
And he has an incredible gummy smile. So I don't want him to ever get teeth.
Yeah.
Because his smile is, he smiles with his whole face, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, just, again, it's the perspective of not having that, not like he could smile when he was so young, but, you know, even just waking up, being able to wake up and see him.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to feel like I am taking care of him and he is relying on me. It's a bit of pressure, but, and of course there's some anxiety because
right. There
was that time when he was so vulnerable, but it's also like comforting that
yeah. I
can do that.
Yeah.
And so his smile and his laugh, and he's pretty darn ticklish. And so, yeah, he's great. Our times in the morning are just so precious, and it's every day that I take him to daycare, it is so hard because it's leaving him somewhere again. But yeah, I cherish those moments that we have, and just thankful that he's healthy and he's with us. And yeah,
it's that flips, that gratitude being like the flip side of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you can appreciate every little thing that you have now that you wanted all along but didn't have. It's this interesting, it's a weird feeling because you wish that you didn't feel that grateful because of what you had to go through. But at the same time, it's really special to like not take moments like that for granted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's moments that, you know, I missed. Well, there's a lot of moments that I missed, just not being able to be with him, but when he was in the NICU all the time. But yeah, just, and there's a little bit of regret, but then yeah, the gratitude of, I'm going to like savor every moment that I can. And that doesn't mean that I have hard days that
right.
I just want to take a vacation
part.
From being a mom, mm-hmm. like the sleepless nights and,
yeah.
you know, but yes, the being able to sort of take a step back and think about those things, I do more frequently now.
Yeah. Well, if there's someone listening who's either processing having had a little one in the NICU or is there right now, what would you want to say to them?
I would just say that give yourself a lot of grace, and that what you're feeling, even on days, there are days you may feel like you don't want to go visit your baby,
mm-hmm.
Just because of all the emotions it can bring up. I mean, all of that is so normal, and just, you, doesn't mean you are a bad parent. And, you know, the guilt is something that happens, but don't feel guilty for being guilty or feeling guilty. But yeah, just try to give yourself grace, and it is kind of just taking it a day at a time, and it is absolutely a roller coaster, and there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of, you know, feeling like things are out of control. But you know, it's there is a lot of hope too in the whole thing, and you will experience all of those emotions, you know, multiple times throughout the day, and that's all okay. But it is not an easy time, and yeah, it doesn't automatically get easier when when they're discharged either. So,
yeah. So just grace, mm-hmm. just so much grace, mm-hmm. never too much grace.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't be hard on yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard enough already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kyla.
Yeah. Thank you.
I appreciate you sharing. I know that's a hard story to share, and I just feel for you guys, and I'm cheering you on like every little minute at a time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom, and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful. If you are seeking supportive parenting resources, please visit hmhb-lifts.org, an online guide meant to connect Montana families to services and programs throughout the state. It's okay not to be okay. Help is within reach, and you don't have to go this alone. We promise. And if Mother Love speaks to you as much as we hope it does, please consider supporting this project by subscribing to the podcast, sharing it with your network, and or writing us a quick review. We are passionate about getting these stories out into the world, and we need you to help us spread the word. Oh, and just one more thing. We know a lot of moms who are really fired up about creating change in the maternal healthcare world. If you feel inspired to make a donation to this movement, please go to hmhb-mt.org/donate or click the link in the show notes. Even just a $5 or $10 donation can make a huge difference. Imagine a future where mothers and caregivers feel supported, seen, and heard as they carry out the most important work of their lives.